Jane told her mom, "Oh my gosh, somebody just tried to abduct me."
Teenage girls meeting men online only to later end up dead.
Because children are not developmentally capable of making proper decisions.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is your host, Jim Clementi, former New York City prosecutor, retired FBI profiler, writer, producer on CBS's Criminal Minds, and...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes. You notice I don't say what I'm former because I just can't compete with Jim. So I figured I should just say, hi, Jim. How are you?
Stop. Well, with us today, again, is a very special guest.
John McKinney.
John McKinney, also known as... Detective McKinney.
Correct.
Well, it's great to have you back.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you, John. I mean, I know that since you were here last time, we've heard from lots of listeners about your first case, and they're very eager to have you back on here so they can listen to your next case. So what kind of case is it today?
It was reported as an attempted abduction.
Okay. And... this is a very serious crime.
Sure.
One of the problems with abductions is that they could become lethal events very quickly.
Absolutely.
Was it an abduction of a child or an adult?
She was a young teenager.
Okay. So, unfortunately, those are not very good situations.
Right.
I mean, we did a study when I was in the behavioral analysis unit and of abductions and child abduction homicides, and 44% of kids who are abducted and killed are killed in the first hour, 73% in the first 3 hours, and 99% in the first 24 hours. So you have to act quickly. You have
right.
to know for sure if it's real and whether it's a stranger abduction, and you have to find the person right away.
Right.
Otherwise, the statistics are pretty grim.
So in your last case, you were telling us about your first murder case, and you'd
mm-hmm.
been a detective for not very long. So when did this case occur in your career?
I was probably a detective for about a year, so by no means seasoned or a veteran, but I had a little experience under my belt. So this was 2 years ago now, roughly.
So tell us what you were doing when the case came into you.
Well, I was on call, and what that means is – basically, wherever I'm at, I should probably be in my work car, be ready, look professional, be ready to go to work at any time. Phone rings, answer it. Patrolmen, supervisors might have questions or need me to come out and write a search warrant or need me to take over an investigation, and it's my job to be there.
So you know, when you're on call, this is not your duty hours. This is you're on call when nobody else is working, right?
Correct. Right.
So it could be overnight, it could be on right. a weekend, it could be on a holiday.
24/7,
right.
someone's on call.
And I experienced that myself when I was an assistant U.S. attorney. I had duty. We had rotational schedules of duty. We would have a very specific duty phone that all the agencies in the Atlanta area knew the number to. And if it was, I was in the violent crime and national security section. And if it was one of those kinds of cases, and if it was evening or weekends, I was getting the call.
Right.
And it's one of the things we've heard from our listeners very recently, Jim. We released an episode with Patty Daly Lewis, mm-hmm. if you recall, where she's talking about getting a case while she's at like a Christmas party with her boss. And the case comes in and that's it. You drop everything. And I think that's so illustrative of what cops and agents and prosecutors have to do all the time. You're never really off duty.
Right.
But when you are the duty person, you're definitely not off duty. And like you say, if you have to roll out of bed at 3 a.m. because the duty phone rings, I've had to do that where you have to then go meet the magistrate judge and the FBI agent who needs a search warrant or an arrest warrant right then. It doesn't wait. You don't say, oh, criminal, could you just hang out for a few hours?
I have things at the house I need to take care of, or my wife's going to be upset. Can you please wait a little
bit? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. And it's really difficult if husband and wife are on the job, right?
Sure.
Definitely.
That can be the case. So it's interesting that you say you were on duty. We interviewed a detective, Christine Menina from Indianapolis. And when they're on duty, they call it on the bubble. So they're waiting for the next, whoever gets the next murder is on the bubble.
Right.
So you were on the bubble, so to speak.
I was. Yep. I got the call. I think it was pretty early in the night. I like to get called out before I go to sleep. That way I can just stay up. It's easier.
Yeah.
If I sleep for an hour or two, usually I'm having a bit harder time.
It is disorienting to get a call in the middle of the night and have to be professional, get up and go to court or go out to a scene.
And has that happened a lot?
Oh, many times.
Really?
For a while. We're on a rotation of about 15 detectives, give or take. So you're typically on call a couple of times a month. And for a long time, it was if I was on call, I was working through the night no matter what. Yeah.
Wow. And in a small town like that, that's pretty amazing. That's a lot of crime.
Right. A lot of people don't realize it, but, you know, it could be minor things too, or, you know, not always a real serious case.
You still have to go out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You have to check it out. Someone calls police. Someone has to come.
Sure.
So you get the call. What happens?
I get the call and it's reported as an attempted abduction. Allegedly, a stranger came to this girl's window and attempted to pull her out of the window, her bedroom window. It's nighttime. Oh. Roughly 8 or 9 p.m. when it happened, and attempted to pull her out of the window. Nothing else was known.
And she was how old?
15 at the time.
It sounds a lot like Polly Klass or Elizabeth Smart.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I had a case, a serial child abduction case in, Mesa, Arizona. And it was repeatedly that same exact scenario. Somebody would reach into an open window or slide open a window or cut a screen and grab a kid right out of their bed.
What a scary thought, right?
It's incredibly frightening. And, you know, I say all the time that true stranger abductions are rare, and they are. But that doesn't mean they don't happen.
Sure.
And so, of course, you have to protect your children from something like that. So this is the report. Do you go out to that child's house?
I do. Yeah. And to touch on what you said about the stranger abductions, I mean, that's the worst nightmare for me. Typically where you start with a crime is who would do this? Why would they do it? They're typically close to the victim. In a stranger abduction, you don't have anything.
Right.
Right.
So in this case, I went out to the scene, started speaking to everyone involved. I just kind of had a gut feeling that.
Before you go there,
sure.
Did you talk to the victim's parents first or the victim?
The victim's parents, without a doubt. Yeah, I talked to her mom and her dad.
And what did they say?
They told me that the same story our dispatchers received, that their daughter was 15. She was in her bedroom, which she has to herself, doesn't share it with anybody. The door was closed. And mom heard kind of a scream. So she thought that was a little odd. She opened the door and found Jane Doe laying on the bedroom floor. And the window to the bedroom is open. Jane told her mom, oh my gosh, somebody just tried to abduct me. Mom's first reaction was to call 911. Mom also added that about 30 minutes before this scream, someone knocked on her door, which was odd. It's not the kind of place you get a lot of foot traffic in this neighborhood. You know, homes sit on a couple lots, not real close to the road. Abnormal to get a knock on your door at 9 p.m.
At 9 p.m., okay. So and somebody knocked at the door and
somebody knocked
she
at
answered
the door.
The door?
Mom answered the door.
Uh-huh.
She saw a man kind of standing, you know, sometimes how police officers stand a little far away off the door, kind of peeking around, maybe a little pillar or something. And this man was standing that way. She thought it was odd. He was an older man. So she said, what are you doing here? And he gave her some sort of odd excuse. He was there because he was looking for someone. It just didn't add up to mom.
Okay.
So mom closed the door and said, get out of here.
But she didn't call the police at that
point? Not at that time. No.
Okay.
She waited until she heard her daughter scream.
Okay. And so.
So she's associating those two events. Obviously, mom is thinking that guy was seeing who's home and where they are.
Right.
And 30 minutes later, he's trying to grab Jane out her window.
Right. Good detective work on mom.
Right.
So did you interview the parents together or separately?
I tried to interview them separately, but sometimes that's difficult. Obviously, you want to hear the story from each one individually, see what they know. You don't.
So that.
Well, you want to get the truth. You don't want one to be influenced by the other.
Right. So
and it might not be a, you know, any nefarious intent on their part.
Human nature sometimes.
Yeah, you want to avoid cross-contamination of witnesses, right? So you interviewed the mother, and what about the father?
Father wasn't home. He was at work when this all happened. Came home when he found out about it, and only received the story secondhand.
Got it. Okay, so then I assume the next person you interview
is the girl, okay. Jane Doe. We talked to her. We talked to her inside the house originally with mom. And then we just kind of had the feeling that we weren't getting the whole story. Not really a set of articulable facts, just that gut instinct. So we asked mom if we could talk to her outside, just her and the police.
You mean Jane outside?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And mom said, absolutely, no problem. So we step outside and I typically try to give people in that scenario, I try to let them know, hey, I don't believe you, and try and calm them down a little bit, let them know it's okay to be honest with me. She's not in any trouble or anything. And she eventually says that she had been speaking to men online and was inviting them to the house to hook up with them, either do sexual things or talk. But typically these men were older.
Right. Jim, how many cases have we heard of this around the world of teenage girls meeting men online only to later end up dead because they met them offline?
Very
in the
dangerous.
Real world?
Yeah. I mean, when you just started saying that, Francie and I looked at each other, and because we both work in the area of child sexual victimization, and this was a very, very common thing. And a lot of actual abductions, many of them, start this way. They meet online. They agree to meet this person in the real world. The person either convinces them to run away or doesn't ask for their consent and takes them away. And many times that ends in a very, very bad way for the child.
It does. It's sad. And I'm hoping that certainly didn't. I'm hoping this is not where this case is going. So you talk to her. She says she's been talking to men online and inviting them to come hook up. What happened after that?
Well, she admitted that she knew the man who came to the window. Eventually, she admitted that, and that she had been talking to him. And she wasn't trying. He wasn't trying to abduct her. She was trying to get out the window to meet with him. Mm. Now, she was a taller girl, not real easy to get out of those windows. So when she was seen on the ground and someone heard her scream, she actually fell trying to get out of the window and made up this excuse in order to save face. Meanwhile, I'm sure this guy's running away as mom's opening the bedroom door.
Well, I'm hoping that as a result of that part of the interview, that you were able to seize her computer.
We did. Yeah, I think we had a cell phone and two iPads.
See, now you're up my alley. This is what I specialize in at the U.S. Attorney's Office, was computer-facilitated child exploitation.
Right.
So I'm very eager to hear about how things go next.
So did I. And in fact, I helped train, hundreds of ICAC investigators. Mm-hmm. So this would be federal, state, and local investigators that work the Internet Crimes Against Children task forces that are in every state across the United States now.
Jim might have even helped train me. I don't want to admit to it, but there could have been a class or two that I took from Jim Clemente.
Sure you slept through it.
Probably.
Based
anyway.
On your experience.
Jane admits that this is not what it appeared. Although, it's still a crime. I mean, if she's going to hook up with him, she's 15. That is under the age of consent in Florida, correct?
Absolutely.
So a crime is presumably planned.
Absolutely.
Whether she understands that or not, of course, is not the point. The adult is supposed to understand that.
Certainly. Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
And that in and of itself is a crime. So we really want to find out what happens when you get access to her electronic communication devices.
Yes. And enticing enticing a child using a computer over the internet carries a federal sentence of 10 years to life. So it's a big fat hit just trying to entice the child to engage in sexual activity. Sexual activity didn't even have to take place.
Right.
It's a federal crime. Well, the new year is finally here, and here at Best Case, Worst Case, we hope you had a wonderful holiday season full of good food and lots of great time with family and friends. I'm sure you've noticed over the years there are a lot of engagements during the holiday season. I certainly have. And if you just got engaged or you have a friend who's getting ready to tie the knot, I can't wait to tell you all about Zola. Zola is reinventing the wedding registry and planning process to make the happiest moments in couples' lives even happier. It's free, easy to use, and yes, it's even fun. You can personalize your registry with photos and notes about why you're coveting certain gifts. With over 500 top brands and 50,000 gifts, experiences, and cash funds to choose from, Zola has everything you love about your favorite department store, plus things like honeymoon funds, fitness classes, wine subscriptions, and so much more. I was on the website for about 2 minutes before I found great gifts for a couple of nieces and nephews that are getting married soon. To sign up with Zola and receive a $50 credit toward your registry, go to zola.com/bestcase. Again, that's Zola, zola.com/bestcase.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So what happened when you got access to her phone and her iPads?
Well, that night we have our own lab where we can dump a myriad of different devices. It's a forensic lab at our police department. In support of different ICAC task forces.
So is it
You're an ICAC task force affiliate?
We are.
So it's a cyber lab?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So when you say dump the phone, what you mean is you can take all the data, effectively copy it so you can look at it all.
Correct. Yep. Hopefully we get all of it.
So what happens?
Well, what we did is a cursory search of the devices that night. So we found some different applications she was using. She found some different photographs she was trading.
Well, let's talk about that because I think it's really important for the people out there who are listening, who have kids, who may be teenagers,
right,
to understand what they're using today. And I know that every week or month we hear about some kind of new thing. The latest I heard about was Kik.
Kik is not actually the latest, Jim. Jim is a bit of a caveman on technology, can I just say? But yes, Kik is out there.
Agree.
There's, of course, Snapchat and a ton of Instagram and tons of others.
All over the place.
So were those the sort of apps you were looking for?
I was looking for those. I was looking for things that were a little more obvious, different like sex sites, applications for dating, things like that.
Tinder.
Yeah, and there's a new one every day.
There is.
And we found them. They were on her devices. There was clear communication with different people, including this person that we eventually found out.
Which, well, okay, can I just say, I'm so sorry, but I have to get on my soapbox just a tiny bit for our listeners out there, because this, I blame her parents. I hate to say that, because of course parents have a lot of difficulty keeping up with technology. Jim's a great example, as I said, caveman. But anyway, they should be checking their children's devices.
Sure.
They shouldn't be allowed to download apps without parental permission. They should be changing the passwords every week or so on a random basis, parents. They should be looking at their children's phone, and they should understand what it is that they're looking for, because no child should have Kick or Tinder or Ask.fm, any of these known bullying sites, right, these sex sites. They shouldn't have them. And the fact that she did tells me, and you, obviously, that her parents weren't checking her phone.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm sure that they just didn't know that that was a risk.
Yeah, and probably not. And who can keep up with stuff like that?
Well, I certainly can't. Francie apparently can. I don't know how.
Well, it is actually time consuming, and you really have to dedicate yourself to understanding technology. And parents have lots of things going on. They have lots of other concerns. They're just trying to work and put food on the table and keep their child, you know, going to school. But I'm interested in what you discovered. You said that her downloads, or the dump that you did on her devices, showed you a person.
Right. But what was her profile like on these apps? Was she identifying herself as a teenage girl who was 15?
Not necessarily. No. In the communication I found between her and the suspect that we inevitably located, she didn't identify herself as 15. She was pretending to be of age. And she didn't appear to be underage. I could see believing that she's 18 years old.
Which is why the guy came to the front door. Mm. He wasn't sneaking around the back or sneaking at her window, at least not first. He came to the front door. However, then he went to her window.
Yes, he did.
Which he suggests did. To me that at, I don't know what point, he knew she was a child. Because he's not walking in the door asking for her.
Certainly. Once you go to the door and you encounter mom and you realize
she lives with her parents,
maybe I shouldn't be here. And then you go to the window. I agree. There's some implication of guilt.
Yeah, yes, definitely. Sure. And so it's also possible that in the interim, between the time he was at the front door and the time he was at the back window, that he and Jane Doe had some form of communication.
Absolutely.
And she directed him around there, or he said, climb out your window.
Right. Which, to Francie's point, I don't think is any less, makes him any less guilty, but certainly they discussed it. There were some photographs we've seen that were traded between the two of them.
Like sexual photographs?
Yep, criminal in nature. There's definitely qualifies child porn.
Child pornography.
Without a doubt.
And of course, we like to call it
indecent images of children, or the sexual exploitation of children.
Yes.
Although images, child pornography is the correct legal term in this country, but the rest of the world calls it something different, because I think pornography makes people think it's somehow volitional or voluntary by the children that are participating in what are these horrific photos, sometimes of assault, sometimes self-produced, but are ultimately a crime scene.
Right. So sexual abuse images are a crime scene. It's contraband. It's just like cocaine would be, or heroin would be. Mm-hmm. You can't possess it. You can't make it without violating the law.
And by the way, to any potential offenders out there, the fact that you didn't know she was 15 when you have the child pornography is not a defense.
No. But here's an issue that you raised. We're not saying that the victim is at fault here.
Correct.
These laws are put in place because children are not developmentally capable of making proper decisions with respect to sexual relationships with adults. And so, because of that imbalance of power, and to protect them from their own lack of development, these laws are in place. And if a child is engaged in sexual activity with an adult, the adult is always the criminal,
right,
not the child.
So, have you identified him from her devices, or do you just kind of know he's the person who came that
All
night?
We have some applications. We have the screen names he used on those applications, which, as you guys know, It's going to be weeks. Weeks before I can tie any real identity to that. So we were able to get his phone number in a cursory search of the device. And I remember sitting in my car where I have my computer, and we have dozens of databases I can look for a phone number in, searching all sorts of things. Can't find any of them. And a lot of people use phones that are hard to find phone numbers for sometimes.
Phones sometimes, right. Those pay-as-you-go phones.
So I was really at a loss. I had nothing else to go on. I didn't know who this guy was. She alleged that she didn't know him. I decided I would call a local sheriff's office just out of a hunch and see if their database, which I can access and doesn't communicate with my databases, had that phone number.
I mean, this is one of the problems.
Huge issue.
I think there are 17,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States of America, and most of them don't communicate with each other.
If we could just all get on the same thing, it'd be a beautiful world.
Well, that's why VICAP was actually put in place. Unfortunately, it's still growing, and it needs to grow more. Violent Criminal Apprehension Program, where they offer law enforcement agencies free software and hardware to put all their data in.
Which is very expensive.
Yeah, free, if they put it on this system. And that means that all the other agencies that are on VICAP will be able to communicate with each other.
Right.
But so I'm guessing that since you brought it up, that you checked your databases and they didn't work, but you reached out to the sheriff, that maybe the sheriff had a response.
Right. The sheriff's office had done a traffic stop not too long before this, and an individual gave that phone number. It's common that police officers write your phone number on traffic citations.
Smart.
Right. Yeah. And that was recorded. So that came down to someone sitting in a records area, typing that little number in, and then it gave me a suspect.
Wow.
That's fast. Cool. That's way faster than you can get the internet responses to find out who the internet service provider is and then get a subpoena to them and then find out who's maybe sitting behind the device.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So I was able to track that phone number to an address, which is in a town almost in the center of the state, actually. It's called Arcadia. Very rural, old, very – there's a ton of history there. My partner and I go out to this address. We meet with that sheriff's office, which is a different sheriff's office than I contacted for the lead. A deputy meets us. We explain to him what we want to do. And there's a nice home on this piece of property. We go to the front door of the home.
Wait, have you seen a picture of your suspect, by the way, in the images that he sent to the child?
Nope.
No.
None.
So you don't know what he looks like?
Nope. Not at all.
Okay.
Definitely going in blind, so to speak.
Great.
Can I just ask you something? When you got on the porch, did you hang back from the door a little bit and hang by the pillar?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Just wanted to know.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In the shadows.
Are we wondering whether this guy is a cop? Okay. Keep going.
No, but I'm hoping not. So I knock on the door. A gentleman comes to the door. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning at this point. Obviously, he probably wants
John McKinney,
to know.
John McKinney, are you telling me that you are trying to protect a child by just staying out and investigating the case, no matter what the hours? In other words, you didn't just close the file and say, I'll go look for this guy at 9 a.m.?
Without a doubt.
Amazing.
Awesome.
You're amazing.
That's dedication.
Hashtag dedicated cop.
Hashtag
I'm totally going to use it.
Okay.
So.
He answers the door. We explain to him who we were there for, just off the hunch of the person who was given the citation. He said, he lives in my barn. Is there anything I need to know? Nope. Do you mind if we talk to him? Not a problem.
He lives in my barn.
I think that might be the first time I've heard that.
It was a very large barn.
Lives in my barn. All okay. Right.
So he walks us to the back of his property, to the barn, through a couple sets of doors, and there's a living quarters. Mm-hmm. And there's a gentleman in bed, clearly a little startled that we're there. And we just begin talking to him, very consensual in nature. We ask him if he had anything to do with Jane Doe. Originally, he denied it. Those spidey senses, if you will, kicked in again. Clearly, he was lying. So we pushed him on it a little bit harder. And then he admitted that he met her online. He admitted that he came to her house. He admitted what his intent was at some point, but he claimed he didn't know her age.
How are your spidey senses on that question?
He was questioning her age without a doubt.
Yeah.
Did you bring up the fact that he snuck around the back and had her climb out the window?
Of course.
Why would somebody of age have to do that?
Never done that on an adult date.
Maybe
I can say neither have I, Jim. I'm just going to put it out there.
Maybe we're just boring, but go ahead. So what did he say?
He claimed he didn't know. He claimed he had no negative intentions, no criminal intentions, but he did give us his cell phone. He let us take his cell phone, and we did, and we eventually dumped that, so to speak. We didn't arrest him that night. We didn't arrest him at all, actually. We could never charge him. We weren't able to get enough to charge him. One of the reasons, it's my worst case. But when we looked at his cell phone, we found no child porn other than the photographs Jane Doe had sent him.
But why wasn't that chargeable?
The state didn't like the case just based on the look of the images.
Because the child looked older than she was.
Right. And that she was portraying herself as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't immediately recognizable that she wasn't. Filing decision made by them.
Yeah. Prosecutors.
Hmm. Anyway. Some of them aren't that brave, Jim. I'm just going to be honest and set it up right out there.
Well, they have certain rules they have to follow. I try not to get too upset about it.
Well.
You can get upset about it. Jim and I don't mind.
Yeah.
Jim often gets upset about things.
Francie doesn't. But she does make others upset somehow. I don't know. Magic, I guess.
It's a gift.
So let's talk about this. So you weren't able to prove it even though he had images, sexualized images of a child, because they didn't seem to sort of be very blatant.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So what happened after that?
Well, eventually we were able to get the full forensic download done on all the devices we took. And I noticed in her communications with people over some of the different apps she was using that she was always seeking out older men, much older, not just 18 handsome guys, but 60s.
Oh, wow.
Always, without fail. And I thought that was very odd.
Yeah, well, I think you were right about that.
So
now I'm a little bit worried about what's going on at home, but keep going.
My point exactly, Francie. So I looked into that a little bit deeper. I began talking to mom, who I had a good working relationship with. Felt like she trusted me. I felt like she would tell me anything I needed to know. Told her my concerns. She claimed she didn't have any of the same concerns. I then did a forensic interview with the girl. And forensic interviews, I don't know if you guys are familiar with them in the federal system or in your states.
Yes, very.
But they're done by professionals to interview children. They ask very non-leading questions. They make them feel very comfortable.
So did you do the interview, or you had a child interview specialist do the interview?
I had a specialist do the interview.
Okay.
I have some training in it, but not nearly to the level.
And was it at a child advocacy center?
It's very similar. We call them child protection centers.
Okay, yep. Great. That's a wonderful thing. We like to hear that.
We do like to hear that. I have a ton of experience with those. I worked as a state prosecutor with the child advocacy centers in my state when I specialized in crimes against children there when I was an ADA. And those are really the unsung heroes, because they literally train themselves to sit and listen to the most horrific things children sometimes have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have so much respect for these forensic interviewers and forensic evaluators, because that is secondary trauma for them. Every day on their job, they have to look children in the eye. Children will say horrible things about something someone has done to them, and their response has to be incredibly neutral. Why don't you tell me more about that? They
right.
can't express shock, dismay, disbelief, horror, all of which, of course, they're feeling,
sure.
we would all be feeling.
Very stoic.
On the inside, they have to be that way, and I think it's so difficult. So I'm very glad to hear that you have access to those professionals.
So what was the result of this interview?
We didn't glean anything useful. Hard to tell. Typically, I sit and watch those if I have a victim or a suspect being interviewed in there. I like to watch them on a video camera. I didn't notice any real body language that I thought was noteworthy. I didn't get anything from it, which I felt a little disappointed, and I was a little confused by it. So I figured after that, I would speak to her father. I really wanted to speak to Jane Doe's father alone,
mm-hmm.
or at least without mom or daughter there. And in order to get him in, I had to ask mom to bring him in. I didn't really tell her exactly what I was going to ask him or what I was going to do. She did, and my partner and I sat him down and discussed some things with him, and it came up that in his past, he had had a crime that he was convicted for sexual relationship with a family member that was younger than him.
Oh, my.
And of a certain age group. So I was obviously more concerned at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him if he would take a polygraph. He said he would not. He refused.
Well, there's a clue.
And he wouldn't admit to anything. I believe at one point he had made references to his attorney. We stopped the interview. I spoke to mom. I expressed my concerns, my overwhelming concerns to
her. Was she aware of the conviction?
She was not aware of the conviction. He had lied to her about what he did that time in prison for.
Mm.
And
another red flag.
Definitely a red flag. So obviously she found out. And when she found out, I told her, you know, my concerns. And eventually had to close the case because I couldn't do anything with it.
So did mom stay with him?
The last I know, mom did stay with him, yes.
It's just shocking. It's so maddening because so many people, I like to say in my, just a sort of a rough estimate, in my cases prosecuting as an assistant DA, when I would prosecute sexual crimes against children, about 70% of the moms did not support the child. It was shocking to me that they would rather prioritize their relationship, the money the offender gave them, whatever it was. Their instincts were contrary to what society says a mom's instincts are. And instead of protecting their child to their death, they keep the child available to the offender. Right. And it's just a fact. It is a sad fact in these kinds of crimes. And it sounds like that's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah. But let's look at the flip side of this, too. The reason why you suspected that the father might be sexually involved with Jane Doe was because of her behavior.
Right.
It's kind of extreme behavior.
Absolutely.
And acting out behavior, sexual acting out behavior like that, many times has its roots in victimization.
Being so sexually advanced at that age.
Exactly.
Seeking out older men.
Right. There's a lot of red flags there. So that's a cautionary tale to people out there. And, you know, I just have one other question to ask, though. If she was interacting with all these other guys, weren't there any other guys on that phone or on that iPad that could be prosecuted?
Not that we could identify. And there was, other than communication, we didn't find any other child porn that was sent to him.
Really? And but she said she had been meeting guys. Was this right. The first guy she met in person?
No, she had met another guy who we couldn't identify.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, John McKinney, I can see why this is your worst case.
Please tell us. I know it may be easy to figure out, but tell us why this is your worst case.
Well, in my opinion, she was definitely victimized at some point. I think, as you guys know, working sex crimes a long time, typically offenders have an age group that they preference. And I think she was probably growing out of that person who was victimizing her's preference. And she was seeking some attention from other people. And it just so happened to be that they were about her dad's age. And that was very ironic. And I picked up on it.
Mm.
And it's my worst case because I felt like it was my duty to stop that. And I didn't. I failed.
Well, it sounds like, though, you probably stopped it. I think you're probably right about her aging out of his preferential age group. So she may not have been at risk to her father anymore. But she was reaching out to the community and finding other guys like that who would take advantage of her as well.
I worry about her for the future, like you say, but I have to disagree with you, Detective McKinney. When you say you failed, you absolutely did not fail. You did everything you could possibly do within the bounds of the law to seek justice, to find the crime, and to prevent it from happening again. There isn't anything else you could have done. And when there isn't anything else you could have done, that's not a failure.
Right. Plus, think about it. You not only educated the mother about what was going on in her own family, right? You also educated the daughter, because I'm sure that once she disclosed this to you, and once she was interviewed, that she was made aware of services that could help her.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Okay, well, that's
help, sure.
It is help. And even though many times victims do not disclose immediately, I was a victim when I was a kid. I didn't disclose till 10 years later. It's how I ended up becoming an FBI agent. But many victims take a long time to disclose. And the fact that you helped her, that you were so dedicated to that cause, and that you gave her an opportunity for help, hopefully one day she will take that. And maybe she will speak out.
Yeah, I hope so too.
We can't force them to, but we can give them an opportunity to and give them help. And I think that's an amazing thing. So you should actually be congratulated. I understand why it's a worst case. And I understand why it probably bothers you. But you should also be very proud of the fact that you were dedicated, that you didn't let things just sort of get swept under the rug, that you did your best. And you also, I'm sure, put the fear of God into that father, and hopefully motivations into the mother.
I cannot believe you just said that. I was literally about to say you put the fear of God, as we would say in the South, in him. So good job, Jim.
Oh,
you're like an honorary Southerner now.
Really? Wow, that's amazing. I hope that's a compliment.
I think it is.
Okay, great.
Totally.
Well, thank you very much for being with us again and sharing your worst case, although maybe you're beating yourself up on it a little bit too much.
Well, that's because he's hashtag dedicated cop.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening, and we're signing off now for Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba and hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stories about child sexual abuse can make us feel powerless. But the good news is that there are organizations working to prevent abuse and keep kids safe. Darkness to Light and their Stewards of Children prevention training has trained more than 1.4 million adults to protect, recognize, and react responsibly to child sexual abuse.
But there's more work to do, and with their 4 million by 2020 goal, Darkness to Light is setting their sights on training 4 million adults around the country to keep kids safe. By donating to Darkness to Light, you can help reach this goal that will make communities across the country safer places for kids.
It starts with you. Visit www.d2l.org today to give. That's www.d2l.org.